This is Sandra Hale. I'm sitting here with Azza Basreddine to ask her some questions about the history and nature of emus. I'm one of the founders of JMUs and past president of emus. We selected Azza for various reasons that will become clear when we start talking. It's March 1st, 2019, and hi, Azza.
Hi, Sandra. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to do this.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. Well, I mean, we know one of the reasons we invited you is because you were a longtime secretary of emus, and the secretary position is quite an inside position. You know, you pretty much know everything that's going on and the personalities and that sort of thing.
So, and more.
And more, yes. So we thought that you were a very good choice. So if you can introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your research, and then we'll start out with your earliest memories of emus.
Okay. Hi, I'm Azza, and I studied with Sandra, actually, at UCLA. I work on the Middle East and Southeast Asia. I studied women's organization, looking at the ways in which women work with religious texts and cultural memory. And I also do transnational feminism, post-colonial studies, so a little bit of, you know, everything, I guess, though I used to. So if we want to talk about emus, right, you, Sandra, were the one who introduced me to the organization.
Yeah, I remember that. And in fact, I think I'm the one who twisted your arm to become secretary.
You kind of did. I think that was actually a good move on your part, and I was pretty happy to do it. It gave me a lot of exposure, not only to the field, especially to people working in the field, and getting to know people and networking. And that was really an important part of my emus experience.
Mm-hmm. You were a grad student at the time.
I was a grad student, so I took over from Amani Jamal.
Oh.
Yeah.
I forgot she was secretary for a while.
She was secretary for a long time, actually. She was the one who set up the listserv. So when I took over from her, emus had an old website that wasn't really, you know, a fully functioning or interactive website. We had a listserv that was pretty all right, as far as listservs goes in 2000, let's see, when was that, 2005. I remember talking to Amani for quite a bit before I agreed to the position, and it was a learning curve for a few years. I don't know, I mean, do you have specific questions about my time as secretary, or?
Well, you know, our standard question was, please talk about your earliest memories of the foundation of emus, but since you weren't there for the foundation, I guess your earliest memories of your position in emus, or you can skip to what you saw as the perceived need for emus, and how you might see it now if you've kept up with things. So pick any one of those.
Okay, so maybe I'll talk about... So I was secretary from 2005 to 2013, if I remember correctly. And for the most part, it was a lot of management work. Managing the listserv back then is because every message had to be approved, right? So that meant that I had to go into the listserv, look at the messages, and approve the messages before they actually went out to the listserv. So it wasn't automatically. It wasn't like you send an email to the listserv and it automatically gets approved, because there's a lot of spam as well.
Yeah. So, I think Angie does that now, too. It's moderated now.
Yeah, I hope it's better now. So I did that. It was a lot of managing, right? Managing the listserv, figuring out the election. And I don't remember the newsletter. It's the emus bulletin. It was even active at that point in time. I don't really have a memory of it.
No, I think we were, but at a very... Jennifer Olmstead, I think when she took it over... It became something much more solid, let me say, and much more academic, and eventually slicker.
Right. So I think what I saw, I think, in my 8 years or more, in various positions, actually, I was not only a secretary, I was on the emus board, I was on the human rights committee, I was also on the editorial board of the emus, I was a board member, and As a grad student, when I took this position, like I said earlier, it was a good move because it allowed me to interact with people, veterans in the field, right? People who have been doing this work for a long time. It gave me a much more intimate way to understand how an organization functions. I mean, you know, there are all these big names, right? When I started in the field of Middle East Studies, you know who's who in Middle East Studies, but to actually be able to send an email to this person and say, hi, you know, introduce myself, secretary, this is what it is. I think there's a different level of networking that was important, or is, you know, important for a grad student to have at that point. And I think for the most part in the early years of ABMs, it was really divided in terms of graduate students were graduate students and senior faculty or veterans in the field are, you know, were considered faculty, right? So there was, what I saw was a great divide between faculty and grad student in the sense that grad students had their role, what they were supposed to do, what they should be doing, and certain kinds of organizational involvement that they should not be part of. Right, so in other words, how do I put this? Like I felt as a graduate student and as a secretary, I was not necessarily part of, like I wasn't part of the academic circle. I mean, the whole point of AMUs for me, not the whole point, but maybe a big part of it is networking, right? Is to understand what's the latest in the field, what's the latest scholarship in the field, who's doing it, maybe have, you know, mentorship within junior and senior faculty. Right, but that idea was thrown around during the 8 years I was secretary, but I never really saw it materialize as such. Mm-hmm. It didn't really become a concrete idea in terms of mentorship. I mean, you know, there were a lot of talks about how senior faculty should be mentoring junior faculty and maybe think about paying for graduate students to attend meetings, because most of the graduate students can't afford to attend meetings. Right?
Yeah. You weren't paid anything, were you?
No, it was an unpaid position, and I was also not present at a lot of the meetings on a yearly basis because I just couldn't afford to go to the conferences. I think I remember in the 8 years I only attended 2 meetings, MESA. I only went to MESA twice. Right?
And the organization didn't really have the money either.
No, the organization has no funding.
Yeah.
Right. So there was a lot of talk about mentorship, but that didn't really materialize. In part, I think because there's no structure for it. Right? I mean, how do we start doing mentorship online? And who's going to be put in that role? Mm-hmm. How do we match people up? So how do you know the logistics of it? How do we do it, right? So there was the idea of it, but it never took off. I don't know what it's like now. It seems like from the emails I see, I see a lot of job announcements. I see a lot of announcements. I still don't see anything concrete about mentorship. But maybe that's because I haven't really been paying attention.
No, I don't think, Saad brings it up every now and then, and a couple of other people have talked about mentoring grad students, but as you say, it never really got off the ground because mechanisms weren't set up for how to do that. You know, I can, if this were an interview with me, I might have a couple of suggestions, but I'm not sure they would work. Well, you did mention, at the time you joined, did you? I guess you saw a need for it because you, as a grad student, were yearning to make some connections and so on. I think we all saw a need for it. How do you see it now?
I think, you know, a decade ago, there were not many people in organization, right? There were established scholars who everybody knew who they were. You know, there's you, Sandra, there's Nancy, there's Suad, there's all the people that you should know if you are doing Middle East Women's Studies, if you're doing Middle East Studies, right? So it felt more of sort of like an intimate circle. Like you knew who's who. At least that's how I felt back then, right? I still see the need for it, right? I still see the need to bridge the divide between grad student, junior faculty, and senior faculty. But above all, maybe it's time to really ask, what is the aim of AMUs? what, you know, what it started off with. I mean, clearly it has gone through several decades of changes, shifts happening. We've had so many different presidents, et cetera, right? But at the very core level, at the very fundamental level, why was AMUs established in the first place, right? And what does it really still seek to do in this day and age? Do we have concrete goals, that we're looking at? Mm-hmm. If we do really want it to be a space for networking, not just posting job announcements, et cetera, right? What are some of the, maybe one, not just one or two, just one concrete thing that could be done to facilitate mentorship, for example, mm-hmm. right? If that is part of the idea mm-hmm. of the foundation of AMUs, right? I mean, I know there's a lot of other things with AMUs. It's about, there's, I'm assuming there's still a human rights committee. I don't know.
Yeah, Nancy's heading that now.
Okay.
And now we have the oral history project, and I don't know whether Saad has set up a committee and given it a name for doing the narrative history.
Okay.
From her and the committee's point of view.
Because we used to be quite active in terms of writing letters, online petitions. Mm-hmm. We used to do that quite a bit, right? But
yeah.
It's always been a little bit more of a reactive organization in that
mm-hmm.
sense. We were kind of dormant, somewhat dormant, until something came up and, okay, we have to write a letter,
mm-hmm.
right?
And there was a lot of discussion about whether or not these letters, whether we could only write if whatever the issue was concerned women and academics.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really very limiting in a whole lot of ways.
That's true.
So we didn't even actually go into academic freedom all that much.
Not that much.
Yeah.
But one thing I do remember, I mean, towards the end, maybe there was, there was a sort of like a concerted effort to broaden the conception of the Middle East women's studies, right? How do we think about the field?
How do we think
about the transnational work
mm-hmm.
that is happening? Do we consider, for me, I work on Southeast Asia too, and I've always felt like not quite belonging to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm not, my work doesn't solely focus on the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
less so now. So they would talk towards the end, and I think we did a good job in terms of bringing in, broadening the scope of AMUs, right,
mm-hmm.
to think transnationally about
mm-hmm.
gender issues.
And also Middle East Americans,
exactly.
or Europeans or whatever, who were not, at one point, I think, weren't even considered to be, weren't let in,
mm-hmm.
but nobody thought about it. We tried to change the name,
mm-hmm.
and that didn't go over
it
didn't
at go
all.
Much well, yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one of the good things. I mean, I don't know what it looks like now
mm-hmm.
In terms of the outreach, but it also, I think the book prize committee,
mm-hmm.
There was a lot of debate at one point whether or not we can award a book that is not solely focused on the Middle East, but on the Islamic world. Right? So
mm-hmm.
those conversations,
mm-hmm.
if I remember correctly, I don't know if I'm not remembering it correctly,
mm-hmm.
but... That's part of, how do we think about the region, right, and the gender issues transnationally. So.
Well, I think the organization is much more diverse, as you said, but especially we were troubled by not having any women from the region
mm-hmm.
who were, in the core leadership, shall I say. People holding offices and so on, and in fact, not even very many members. But now, I mean, it's really different.
Okay.
It could be better, but I think it's really different. Who would you say? You already named some people, but the people most instrumental in the various attempts to develop AMUs, JMUs.
I remember. I might not be remembering correctly, but I remember you and Nancy, and this was when I was still at UCLA, I was still a grad student, I was still secretary. There was a lot of struggle in terms of bringing JMUs, right, reviving JMUs, or bringing JMUs to UCLA. That was a big decision. That was a big struggle. Do you remember what year that was?
No.
Sorry.
I mean, we should have a foundation of JMUs, because probably it was a year before... Volume 1, Number 1. We can, reconstruct that, I think. The struggle was over the foundation of a journal, period. I mean, that was really argued, that we didn't have the money, that it would, and Amani argued strongly that when we did get started, that J-Muse was really taking all the life out of A-Muse.
Oh my God, that's right. Oh, I remember now that you mention it, that was that, right? That J-Muse is being overshadowed, A-Muse is being overshadowed by J-Muse,
mm-hmm.
and that at some point it needed to be separated for it to be, to run more professionally or productively.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember it came to UCLA, you and Nancy did a lot of work on it. So did Diane and James, editor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then, you know, I worked with Samad, I worked with you, with Nancy, I worked with Hoda Sada, Naya Ali. And Manny was really helpful in so many ways, you know, of showing me how to do things in the early years.
And these were the presidents that you worked with?
Yeah, the presidents I worked with, Hoda Sada, Naya Ali, Nada Elia, too, maybe, I'm not.
Who?
Nada Elia. Am I even remembering correctly? Wasn't she a president? I don't remember. But that, you know, so going back to you asking about some of the names,
mm-hmm.
the folks that I work with, I think it's across the board. I just work with some people more closely than others.
What did you, I mean, you've sort of touched on it, but what did you like most about the, in addition to networking and so on, what did you like about the job?
I actually, and it's going to sound a little bit like I'm fangirling, but you know when you read books before you get into grad school, you read all these books, right, about, you know, and you're like, oh my God, this is such a great book, and then you actually get to meet that person. And to actually talk to,
mm-hmm.
you know, somebody who's done research in the region, who have good pointers on, well, you know, how do you tackle research, right? How do you write an article? How do you get published? You know, these are, it might seem very simplistic, but for a grad student,
mm-hmm.
it was really exciting. It was inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was, right? To be able to interact beyond the sort of like formal boundaries
mm-hmm.
of academia
mm-hmm.
and knowing like, just sort of like a solidarity in being in the organization
mm-hmm.
that maybe at that point I took for granted, but that really helped in the development, I think, of a graduate student thinking about the field
mm-hmm.
and thinking about understanding that, you know, sure, you stand on the shoulders of people who came before you, but to actually understand that for some of these women, that it was a struggle for them themselves to be in the field
mm-hmm.
as a non-Arab
mm-hmm.
person
yeah.
in the field
yeah.
doing the work, and for the most part, most of the senior scholars in the Middle East were non, you know, Arab women,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, they are, but for the most part. So to understand that there's a tension around that in the organization, within the organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
This question of legitimacy, authenticity,
mm-hmm.
And that also feeds into the type of scholarship that was being produced. Right, to be able to actually see that, understand that, and, you know, put a human face to it, the struggles behind it, right? I think that was helpful. That was inspirational in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it was. And what didn't you like?
What didn't I like about it? Well, I would have liked to have gone to the meetings. Our secretary would have really helped me to be present at every meeting every year, right? I mean, I know that's not possible. Funding is always a big problem. I would have liked us to have had an annual conference, you know, like an
mm-hmm.
AMUS conference. I mean, we piggyback on MESA
mm-hmm.
a lot, right?
And we have a program, but it's not really our separate
exactly.
conference, yeah.
And I think the organization wasn't that visible. For the 8 years that I was secretary, it was always sort of like on the periphery of MESA,
mm-hmm.
right? And then when JMUS came about, it's sort of like JMUS took over, and, you know, AMUS further became invisible. And I think part of that is related to not just the management, right, but the lack of, say, coherence around what is the goal of AMU, right? So we have MESA, and then we have JMUs. And what is AMU supposed to be doing, right? Or what do we want to accomplish as an organization?
Mm-hmm. So in a sense, Amani was right that JMUs would be some sort of threat to AMUs. But on the other hand, JMUs brought a certain kind of academic legitimacy to the organization. So, you know, there's a slight contradiction there, I think. Well, you know, we have a question, which was, what has AMUS meant to you over the years? But I think you've I think you've touched on that a bit, but if you want to say more about it, that's fine.
I can't think of it right now. I think over time we developed sort of like, was it AMIUS or JAMIUS to give price to paper, student graduate student paper? Is that, I'm not sure if that's a JAMIUS or an AMIUS
yeah,
thing,
I think
but
it's
I know
a
we have an
AMIUS
AMIUS book committee, book award,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Maybe it would have helped to have had a best student prize paper or something of
mm-hmm.
that sort, right? To bring graduate student more into the fold in terms of academic work, right? But also it would be helpful, I think, for students to have, and this is part of the mentorship, right, of what is it like to go into the job market at that
mm-hmm.
point, right? And I don't think there was a lot of that going around. Yeah.
I think SOAD every year gives some kind of workshop on, maybe it's not on employment, I think it's on grant.
Okay, yeah, yeah, I think so.
Seeking grants, and she's, you know, so good at that. She's fantastic at that. And maybe if, you know, if more of the senior people offered more of their time to do something like that. But, you know, an organization where you only meet once a year, you know, that's pretty difficult. I mean, like the Mesa officers themselves meet during the year. Well, now we can meet in other ways through Skype and that kind of thing. That kind of technology might have existed but wasn't very well developed when you were secretary.
No, but I think towards the end, it, you know, there were more of a concerted effort to bridging the gap between junior faculty, senior faculty, and grad students. I remember faculty sponsoring grad students for dinner at Mesa.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of, yeah, that
yeah.
was that. And, you know, that's a step forward, right? I guess, you know, what it comes down to is expectations versus aim, right? And what's doable. Like you said, it is an organization. Most people interact online. Some people are lucky enough to meet once a year. Others, most don't, right? So.
You know, you're talking about how with grad students, it's really, you know, thrilling or inspiring or whatever to meet these people whose books you've read. But as a sort of middle years, I don't know what to call myself because my career has been so strange. But quite a few years ago, I was on a panel with Miriam Cook. And I thought, wow, Miriam Cook. And, you know, I was impressed. I really wanted to meet these people also. So
even for you.
Yes, yes, even for me. And I don't think I had a book out then or anything else. It wasn't that well known, but it was, and I felt like it helped, probably helped my career. These, at least it helped me be more active, that is, be invited to give talks and that kind of thing because there was some visibility.
Right.
It also helped to be from UCLA.
That's true. No, I mean, I agree about that visibility. I would interact with so many people and then not actually meet them, right? But maybe a year later or a couple years later, meet them at a conference, like, oh, you're the secretary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, people know my name. They
mm-hmm.
might not know my face, but it's nice to be known, right? I mean, when you do, you know, when you do, you're not being compensated in any way. You do this because, you know, you just, you're kind of drawn into it and then you kind of, you know, got talked into it.
Yeah.
But, it's rewarding in so many different ways, I think, and like you said, you know, it helped my career in a way,
mm-hmm.
in one way or another.
Well, maybe, you know, it might help to, I guess you and I in this interview shouldn't be working out the problems of AMUs necessarily, but maybe it would help to have more graduate students head committees, you know, for us to have more trust in them. Like, why can't a grad student head the Human Rights Committee? And there's a board, you know, so if anybody gets out of line, so to speak, you know, there's a board that passes on things. But, you know, that's actually something I might talk about with some people.
I mean, I think that came up during years I was secretary. I think a big part of the conversation revolved around how much more do we want to burden a grad student, right? So I
yeah,
feel like it's a little
it's
bit infantilizing in that sense that, you know, graduate students certainly have a lot on their shoulders. But this is part. If this is part of professional development, I think it's good to say head a human rights committee,
mm-hmm.
Learn how to do things.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not as if we would twist their arm to do it.
Exactly.
You know? Well, do you have anything? Is this interview different from what you expected it might be when I first approached you? I guess.
No, it's not any different, but I was just, I was hoping I would remember more, because I think it's very important to have this institutional memory. So maybe when I go back into my files, I still have all the communication for the past 8 years I was secretary on my laptop. I still have all the folders. Something might come up, something other. Oh, and when I think about the process that we go through in selecting president every 2 years, it's still every 2 years now.
Yes, sometimes you talk people
It's
into staying on
it's
a
quite a
little
process, and what's I find interesting, I mean, I understand this is added work, additional burden. It's a lot of work to be a president, but maybe in the last 4 years I was secretary, I remember how difficult it was to get people to even want to be nominated for the position.
Yeah, very hard.
Yeah.
Well, because people know it's going to be work, and and then it's not. I don't know how rewarding it is to have been president of the EMUs. I mean, I never felt that it made me more visible, frankly. Some of the other, even the committee work often, made me more visible. So I don't know, but this, I think you're right about the infantilizing. Infanticizing, I always want to say.
You don't want to know what you're fantasizing about, but
graduate students, you're adults, you can make your own decisions, and as long as they're not pressured. But anyway, back to what I had said, is there something you'd want to say at the end of this interview?
I just, I'm glad I had the opportunity to be in various positions in the organization for the duration that I was there. And I don't know, I don't remember, I'm probably not remembering correctly, but I think, even if it's an unpaid position, some incentive should be given to people in certain positions, for especially grad students, right? So say free subscription to JMUs or something of that sort. And that is an incentive. Like, it might not seem much, but
Well, it's
it really
something,
is. Yeah.
Well, we live in a society where, uncompensated labor is,
Yeah,
worth
it's the
nothing,
way to go.
and women and volunteerism is something that we've been trying to kind of beat back for decades, but here we are.
Here we are.
Well, thank you very much. If you think of things you want to say, or we
Definitely
can,
email you, I'll follow up with you on that. But
we
thank
can
you.
return.
Thank you for
Yeah,
doing
thank
this.
you. This is, you're the one who drove all the way across town,
It's not that far.
almost. Oh well.
Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you, Asa.